Welcome to Double Take with Matt and Jake. This is Jake Cowden, joined by Matt, who is in his last week as a college student. How does that feel?
It's pretty great, but I honestly feel like I'm more excited about the Jazz than I am graduating from college. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That was a crazy weekend for the Jazz and for the NBA as a whole.
Yeah, no, it's just like, I don't know, it's like I've always, just planned on graduating from college, and also that's kind of in my control. And with the Jazz, it's like every other Jazz fan in the world, I didn't think we were going to make the playoffs this year. So this has just been such a pleasant surprise, and the series has been really exciting, really physical. So I'm just having a great time.
Life's good. Yeah, life's good for you. Life's good for me. I spent Saturday by the pool literally all day. Went to my flag football game at 9 and then just hung by the pool. We were grilling. So we had three TVs set up at my buddy Mike Karampolis's apartment. He let us use that. So we had the NBA game. So the Sixers Heat game we had on one TV. Then on another TV, we had the Utah Royals FC game, the women's soccer team in Utah. They're playing the North Carolina Courage. And then the third TV, the University of Georgia spring football game was on. So it was really just dream setup for me. I'm eating tacos, swimming by the pool, and watching Georgia. The reason I wanted to watch Georgia's spring football game is because they had a kid come in named Justin Fields, who's from Georgia, and he was the number one player in the entire country last year. So not just the number one rated quarterback out of high school, but the number one overall player coming out. So I got to watch him play. His throwing motion looked incredible. It was honestly just really impressed with how he played. So it's going to be interesting to see if he can beat Jake Fromm out for the job. I was watching the rerun of the national championship between Alabama and Georgia, and Fromm looked good, not great, but you could tell that's just such a talented team that Georgia had. So it'll be interesting to see if Kirby Smart can kind of pull the trigger on a more talented freshman over the guy who took him to the national championship last year.
Now, didn't Fromm also take the starting job from the quarterback who was there before him?
Yeah, so Jacob Eason last year, as a sophomore, Jacob Eason got hurt in the first game. So Jacob Fromm came in, excuse me, Jake Fromm came in and won that game. Then the week two, Georgia played at Notre Dame, and Georgia won that game. So it was really Jake Fromm's job the rest of the year. So Jacob Eason, Georgia's original quarterback, who was a five-star as well coming out of high school. I think he was the number 10 or 12 overall player, but five-star quarterback transferred to the University of Washington. So he'll sit a year behind Jake Browning, and then he'll play at University of Washington, hypothetically, the year after that.
Gosh, college, being a college quarterback seems so crazy because now there's just like everybody is transferring if they don't start right away. And I get it because, like, if you're a linebacker and you lose your job, you're still going to come in on rotations and stuff. It's just like it just seems there's been so many transfers in the last few years.
It's the carousel, and now it's even starting to trickle to high school recruiting. Like, universities, they'll recruit one kid, they'll recruit like two at a time, but they won't accept the commitment from one until the other kid commits either to them or someone else. It's crazy. SB Recruiting or SB Nation Recruiting does a great article, like they keep it up with it, about the quarterback carousel in high school going to college. So that's something I recommend reading just for fascination. I read it a lot, really interesting, and then. It's crazy how many transfers there are in college. So that was something I was excited for. But the other game we had watching was the Utah Royals game. I didn't get to watch the end of it because I had to go back in the pool. But how did they do yesterday, Matt?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, man. If you like soccer, then the National Women's Soccer League is just straight up fun to watch. Like, there were two really, really good goals. So it was 2-2. Each team had a great rocket goal. The other goal was kind of a mistake by every other keeper. So it was disappointing because the Royals were winning, but just to see them get a point on the road against North Carolina, who hadn't lost or tied a game yet. They were perfect so far, is impressive. We just, Royals got to get a win soon, but they looked really good, so I'm feeling pretty good about them.
And we're still holding out hope that Ashley Hatch is going to come on the show. And you know who did get a point or 3 points yesterday was Real Salt Lake over our little brother, the Colorado Rapids. I didn't get to see the game, but I was watching the highlights. Albert Rusnak's goal. Y'all need to go see that. It was incredible.
Yeah, Rusnak had a free kick. Plata had a penalty kick. And then Krylock had a goal in open play. I know you've wanted to see more goals in open play, so I don't know how you felt about the offense as a whole. But, you know, I mean, if they've got the ball in the penalty box and get fouled, I mean, that's a good part of the offense. You know, they're getting up in opportune places to provide good free kick spots, good penalty kick spots. And also, can we just give a shout-out to Colorado, who has traded us Kyle Beckerman, Nat Borchers, Chris Wingert, Rudy Gobert, and Donovan Mitchell. I mean, they are the real MVP of Utah sports.
There's the sponsoring the Utah Jazz right now.
Oh, man. I love it. But, yeah, I mean, it was hard to get a ton out of that game just because Colorado was a man down and they kind of, you know, sat back in their box, which is the right thing to do on the road if you're playing with 10 men. But it was nice to get a shutout.
Yeah, from what I understand, it sounded like because Tim Howard, Colorado's goalie and the U.S. national team goalie, got a red card in the 20th minute. So Colorado had to use a substitute. It was a 20th minute or 70th minute, Matt?
20th. So they were playing with 10 men for 70 minutes.
Yeah, so the majority of the game, their backup keeper was in, so they were just trying to get the 0-0 tie. So it's sounded like Real Salt Lake took a while to break through, but once they got that first goal, the other ones just followed pretty seamlessly from what I understood of the game.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, you hear that the other team is playing without a man, so you think it'd be easy to score. What happens is they just play really, really conservatively. So in some senses, it's a little bit harder. But, yeah, but you know, like you said, the goals came in. And the other person who deserves a shout-out is Nick Bessler. He's usually a center-back, central defensive midfielder for the Monarchs. He started at center back for us because we had a lot of injuries. It was a great game for him with, you know, probably limited pressure, but he looked really good when the ball did come to him, looked poised. The defense looked a lot more organized than it had in previous games. So a lot to be excited about.
Nick Bessler's older brother is Matt Bessler, who plays for Sporting Kansas City, I believe still, and also for the U.S. national team.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see his development because obviously his brother is a huge player in the league, so.
Yeah, and he's 24, you know, so he's still, I mean, he's not young like Justin Glad, but he's still a young player who will probably develop into a pretty good MLS player.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Ross Lake had a huge game over Colorado. The Utah Jazz, we're going to talk about a few playoff series. We're going to start with the Utah Jazz, Oklahoma City. Game 3 Saturday night was crazy. Ricky Rubio, man, I couldn't contain myself watching him play, especially that first half.
Yeah, man, like you don't, like Rubio, that's kind of been the weak point. And what we've been worried about with the way this team was built is if people were just going to leave him open to shoot and how much that was going to kill us. And the Thunder did leave him open and he made the shots. So now the team looks really, really strong.
Yeah, Rubio had a triple-double. He finished with he had 26 points, 19 in the first half. I think he had, like, 14 assists and 11 rebounds, something like that. Russell Westbrook also had a triple-double, but his was on, like, very inefficient shooting. I think it was, like, either low 30s or high 20% shooting from the field. He had 8 turnovers, and he had 0 points in the fourth quarter. So while Westbrook still got his triple-double, extremely inefficient. So that's what the Jazz need to do because, obviously, Westbrook and George and Melo, to an extent, are going to get their points. But the games 2 and games 3 that the Jazz have won, they've been able to make those points very inefficient and limit contributions from other players like on the Thunder, like Steven Adams, Patrick Patterson, Corey Brewer. Those guys have been limited, which has allowed the Jazz to really capitalize when they're on offense because we're actually sharing the ball a lot better, you know. Our offense has run so much better than theirs. And I don't know how much of that is Billy Donovan's fault and how much of that is three superstars who are really good and just used to having the ball. But whatever it is, it's working so far.
Well, it's interesting. The theory with playoff basketball is get as much talent as possible because the feeling is that it's ultimately going to boil down to who can win their one-on-one matchups. And and who's going to win those isolation plays. We saw that a little bit last year with the Jazz and what Joe Johnson was able to do. But I don't know. I just kind of think that Utah's defense is too good to do that, you know? So even though, like, Oklahoma City is built to be really good as a playoff team, I'm wondering if the way that the team is built and the way they were hoping their offense would run isn't going to work just because of how good Rudy is and what he allows players like Joe Ingles and Rubio and Mitchell to do on the perimeter.
Yeah, you know, Paul Pierce on NBA on ESPN had a cool statement. He's talked about how Oklahoma City is a much more talented team, and this is something we all know, but he's just said Oklahoma City is a better, more talented team, but Utah is a better team. And I think that's been showing that we still got to win game four. That's a huge game. And Russell Westbrook's – do you see Russell Westbrook's comment about Ricky Rubio in the press conference?
I did see that.
Yeah, so for those who didn't, Westbrook – this is paraphrasing, but he's like – he said he made a couple shots. This is great, but I'm going to shut that bleep off in the next game, which Donovan Mitchell proceeded to like on Twitter.
Yeah. Hey, I mean, my feeling is that if they want to focus their defense and – around Ricky Rubio, and Russell Westbrook wants to spend his energy on shutting down Ricky Rubio, I think that's a win for us. I know he had a great game last time, but...
Yeah, I mean, and theoretically, though, Rubio's going to be, like, the third offensive option, maybe. Like, a lot of stuff's going to be run through him, but Donovan's by far the most focal point of the offense. Then you got Joe Ingles, three-point shooting. Derek Favors has been incredible this series, so you still got to worry about him. When Derek Favors and Rudy Gobert on the floor, you can't. They got Adams on Gobert, and no one can guard Derek Favors. So, on offense or defense, I thought it was going to be a problem having Derek Favors guard Melo, but it's really been the other way around. Melo can't guard Derek Favors, and Favors have been able to do okay with Melo, especially within the defensive system the Jazz are running.
Yeah, and you know that I think, obviously Rubio was great, and he's got a lot of the attention, but I think low-key the key to that game yesterday was just how well the big men were able to play. I mean, Oklahoma City, they shot 50% from three, they shot 47% from the floor, but you look at the rebounds, they had 33 rebounds, we had 48, we had 15 more than them, but then they only had 6 offensive rebounds, and the Jazz had 13. What's his name? Steven Adams. The reason that he's such a important player for them is that he can get offensive rebounds and get them a lot more second chance points. He only had, he didn't have a single offensive rebound yesterday, and he only had 2 defensive rebounds.
Yeah, that's actually an important part, because one thing I'm worried about that I think we do need to talk about more is in the Jazz's 2 wins, game 2 and game 3, Steven Adams has been in really early foul trouble. And really throughout the whole game been in foul trouble. So I think if he can stay out of foul trouble in game 4, that's something the Jazz really need to be worried about. Because both those games were uncharacteristic of him getting in such early foul trouble and really staying in it the whole game.
Yeah, I think so too. But I also think that a lot of getting him in foul trouble was Rudy Gobert. You could watch him and see that Rudy was kind of baiting him into these fouls, and that Rudy knew exactly what he was doing. So Steven Adams is either going to be in foul trouble again, or he's going to have to play Rudy Gobert a lot differently. And if he does that, I just think that's going to allow Rudy to do a lot of different things.
Yeah, Rudy's been so – like, his offensive game is obviously not as good as the defense, and he's not going to be, like, the leading offensive player on a team ever. But just – even if you just look at his free throw shooting, it's gone up from under 50% his first year to now I believe he's in the 70s or high 60%. Like, you can't just foul him. He's going to make his free throws. He's also got a couple nice offensive moves. He's a pretty good passer out of the post as well. So his ability to not just be there on defense and be a liability on offense, but to be a at least average contributor on offense is so huge in us allowing to keep him on the floor in situations like Steven Adams, like you said, getting into foul trouble. So Rudy's offensive proficiency, improvement, I don't know the right word for it, but right, that's the thing I think we need to talk about more. We talked about last year just because of his free throw shooting, but his overall offensive game has improved dramatically from year one to now.
Yeah, so yesterday he was 6 for 8 from the floor and then 6 for 8 from the foul line. So that's somebody that you have to – really pay a lot of attention to on defense. But if, like you said, Steven Adams guarding him, yesterday Derek Favors shot 4 for 5, so not as many points, but really efficient game. And then he obviously had the 20-point game yesterday. So just to be able to slow down both of those guys is something that I think is going to be a real problem for them, just because they don't have that second big defender.
Yeah, when Derek Favors was on the floor yesterday, he was plus 26. That means the Jazz outscored the Thunder by 26 in the minutes that Derek Favors was on the floor, which is an incredibly huge number, especially for someone who plays that large amount of minutes. I think he got between like 20, low 30s, high 20 minutes wise yesterday. So to have a plus 26 is incredible.
Yeah, he was 34 minutes yesterday. Remember when we wanted to trade Derek Favors? And when I say we, I'm talking about me and you, but I'm also talking about the Jazz collectively. And it kind of sounds like the front office from what we've been able to just read and tell. But yeah, things are different now.
Yeah, I really, and I wanted to trade Derek Favors for Kevin Love, because can you picture Kevin Love, the lineup with Ricky Rubio, Kevin Love reuniting again? And I know he's, I think Kevin Love's defense would be at best average, but within, again, the defensive system of Quinn Snyder, with all the other defensive support we have on him, his, can you imagine what Quinn Snyder could do on offense with Kevin Love and Donovan Mitchell?
Yeah, it would look different. The team would definitely look different if we had Kevin Love.
So incredible. I think he'd obviously, like, if I could pick any player, I'd pick LeBron, but like if I could pick any like realistic player who is not like a top five player to come, I would in a heartbeat pick Kevin Love. I just think he'd be the perfect fit for us, especially with the talent we already have. And he's not getting, we forget how good he was in Minnesota. He's not getting used in Cleveland. I know it's different going from the third player, and now that Kyrie's gone in Cleveland, he's the second best player. But when LeBron's off the floor, everything needs to go through Cleveland and Kevin Love, or through Kevin Love in Cleveland. And they're not doing it. They're just running. They're shooting jump shots. Like, he gets a few touches, but he's become a spot-up shooter in Cleveland, and he can be so much more than that. And he was so much more than that in Minnesota.
Yeah, man, they are. You know, we'll get to the Cavs later and talk about their problems, but they look like they're in trouble. I mean, and even if they win this series, I just don't think that they're good enough to get to the finals.
Yeah, they'd have to play probably Washington, or excuse me, probably Toronto, but the winner of the Washington-Toronto series. And that is a series I think I'm looking forward to if they win. But I don't know, just because I don't know what it's going to look like. Because Toronto's a really good team this year, and as good as LeBron is, he can't do everything. And he's been not great on defense. And the Cavs are just such a terrible defensive team. I think Dwayne Casey with DeRozan and Lowry could like exploit that. And even though the Cavs have crushed them every time in the regular season, I would think Toronto would be the favorite in the playoff series, even with LeBron.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, you look at the Thunder beat the Jazz 3-1 in the regular season. Obviously, that was largely in December when the Jazz were one of the worst teams in the NBA. But yeah, no, I agree with you. I think in the playoff structure, and I think being able to, because like one of the wins that Cleveland had against Toronto was like Toronto had a back to back, and Cleveland had to shoot like basically perfectly. So I think, well, that was before. I don't know if you've changed your mind, but you had Cleveland going to the finals. I had the Raptors.
Yeah, I mean, the pick is in, I guess, but if I were putting money on it today, I would pick Toronto.
I mean, part of this is I just don't think people gave the Pacers enough credit. Like, Victor Oladipo is really good. Like,
Yeah, that's
really
the
good.
whole thing. When that Paul George trade happened with Victor Oladipo and Domantas Sabonis, or Eldama as I call him, everyone thought they didn't get enough for Paul George. And with a superstar, you're never going to get enough value. But for what they did get, they did really well for having to give up Paul George, who's a top 10, 12 player in the NBA. They got Victor Oladipo, who's averaging 23, 25 points a game in the NBA. Sabonis has played really well as a second-year player for them as well, especially with that front line that Indiana has with Miles Turner, they're a really young, good team. I think they got a couple good Miles Turner, Domantas Sabonis, and TJ Leaf. I think that UCLA kid. All three of those players are going to be really good, especially if you got Victor Oladipo coming in now. If he can continue the following seasons to play what he's at now or the same level, they're going to be a pretty good team.
Yeah, definitely. So they play later today. Do you think the Pacers can beat them? And if they did, they would take a 3-1 lead, which is very hard to come back to, but obviously LeBron has done that before.
Yeah, I think Cleveland wins today. I think Cleveland wins the series in 6 or 7. It's just so hard for me to pick Indiana over LeBron, despite every number I look at and even actually watching the games. In game 3, Cleveland was up by 17 and couldn't close it out. Their offense was just so stagnant, a lot of standing around. LeBron took himself out of plays. Like, if he gave up the ball, he didn't really involve himself in the offense the rest of the game. Cleveland got a lot of bad shots at the end of the shot clock. I think that's not going to happen in game 4. So I think Cleveland wins game 4. I still think Cleveland wins the series, but I'm not going to be shocked anymore if Indiana pulls it out.
Yeah, it's just the rest of the team is so bad. Like, everybody else is so bad.
Just don't fit very well.
Yeah.
I bet George Hill wishes he would have signed his extension with Utah last year.
Yeah. that's the thing. Okay, so I mean, I don't want to overreact from yesterday, obviously, and Ricky Rubio is not going to shoot that well every game, but assuming that he has improved, you know, as a shooter and is going to be somebody that you can rely who can reliably hit open shots, do you think that worked out for us, switching George Hill for Ricky Rubio?
I think absolutely. Like, what Ricky brings, I think, more than anything that Hill doesn't, is the pace. Like, you'll see Ricky run the ball off the floor, drive in, like, run under the basket looking for cutters. I think with George, if you had George Hill next to Donovan Mitchell, we'd be playing a lot slower. George Hill is a more solidified scorer, so Mitchell wouldn't have as much of a duty or a burden there. Mm-hmm. So I think, especially with the way Mitchell's turned out, and no one knew this, including Josh Reynolds, but with the way Mitchell turned out, I think Ricky Rubio, even though it took a while, is such a better guard, like backcourt combo, those two, versus what Hill, even Hill last year, not including Hill in Sacramento, Cleveland, but George Hill last year and Donovan Mitchell, I think, wouldn't be playing as well as him and Rubio have been the last half of the season.
Yeah, that's what I think. And, you know, I'm a little, you know, I'm always kind of skeptical about assuming that a player is going to get better at shooting. But, I mean, he's just demonstrated the last half of last season, this season, he's been a better shooter. And I just, you know, I just trust the Jazz to develop players so much that I feel pretty good about Rubio.
Yeah, definitely worried about Rubio's shooting. This is the best shooting year. He's played off the ball more than he has, because in Minnesota he was always the true point guard, and with Mitchell having so much ball responsibility, he's been off the ball a lot more, so it's been really interesting to see that development. I do hate that, even though they're late first-round picks, the Jazz did have to give up a first-round pick for Hill and a first-round pick for Ricky Rubio. They gave up the 12th pick, and I believe last year was the 23rd or the 24th pick that they gave up.
Right.
Minnesota for Rubio.
Yeah, I agree. I do think that you have to make both of those moves to try and keep Hayward. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think they did the right thing at the time. Obviously, it didn't work out how we wanted, but I think at the time it was the right thing to do.
No, you have to take that gamble. And the Jazz are one of the only five teams in the NBA that hold all of their own first round picks. Both the ones we traded were Golden State's and Oklahoma City. So at least they weren't ours, and we still have a first round pick in this draft. It's gonna be a late first round pick, but we're not selling or mortgaging the future. Like, New Orleans traded their own first round pick for Nikola Mirotic, so they don't have a first round pick in this year's draft. We're not doing that, which I'd be a lot more upset about if we were, even though, like you said, we did have to make those moves.
Yeah. Yeah, and the other thing is that like you say, Oklahoma's must have been like 23-24. So you can get a pretty good player there. But the Golden State one, that's like a second round pick basically. So
yeah, that's the 30th pick. Yeah, I think, because we, now that I'm thinking about it, Utah's pick was the 24th. That's the one we traded to Denver with Trey Lyles for Donovan Mitchell. Again, shout out to Denver.
Yeah.
So Oklahoma City, they finished sixth. So what we would have traded to Indiana or Atlanta, I forgot who got it. It would have been in the 20 to 22 range probably, because we finished the 5 seed in the West and they finished sixth. Mm-hmm. It would have been about that 20 to 22 range, which, again, I'll take Ricky Rubio or George Hill for that. Even the 1 year George Hill, like, I don't think we have as year we do this year without the season last year with George Hill and Hayward, what they did, even though they're not on the team anymore.
Yeah.
So I think it was definitely worth it.
Yeah, definitely. And for reference, Rodney Hood was somewhere between the 20th and the 23rd pick. So that's about what you're giving up is Rodney Hood, who's a good player, who's demonstrated that he can't really build a team around him or depend on him to be.
I was really hoping Hood would step up and be the replacement for Hayward. I love me some Hood. Loved him at Duke. I'm glad he's doing okay, I guess, in Cleveland. I hope he has a really good NBA career. I just didn't step into that number one score role that we hoped he would.
Yeah, you know, and that's just not who he is, you know, and that's fine. He's more like a, you know, probably not as good as Jamal Crawford, but that type of player who, you know, comes in, hits some shots, probably a bench player, but a really good, like a six man. That's just who he is, and those people are valuable, so he's definitely going to have a good career.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see where he goes, especially in Cleveland, because he's a restricted free agent this year. So this whole offseason in the NBA is going to be interesting.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about, quick with you, Matt. So Philly went up 3-1 on Miami yesterday, and Ben Simmons played well. Embiid came back, and I think he came back in game 3, but it was definitely back in game 4.
Yeah, Embiid was back for game 3.
Yeah, so Miami's down 3-1. They go back to Philly this week. Do you think – I don't know why Miami's not as good as they are. Like, I feel like they should be better than they are with Wade, even though it's not the same Wade, and Goran Dragic, because Hassan Whiteside has been non-existent.
Yeah, that's the problem. If Hassan Whiteside was there, they would be better.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know what he's doing, but especially those two games in Philly where Embiid was out, he didn't do anything, and he wants to be a top center, a top player in the league, but he needs to show it. You know what I mean? He can't be their like fifth scoring option when the other guys are like James Johnson and Justice Winslow.
Well, it's weird because he has shown that he can be a really good center. So I'm not totally, so I don't know what's going on, but we've seen him play really well.
Yeah. So I think I was cheering for Miami. I bet Philly wraps it up in 5. I think they're going to beat Boston or Milwaukee. Milwaukee tied their series with Boston 2-2 today. So I think I'm feeling good about them going to the finals and playing probably Toronto, but as we discussed, could be Cleveland or Indiana. Yeah. I don't think Washington, if they win the series, gets past that other team. Who do you think? Do you think Philly goes to the finals in the Eastern Conference?
Yeah, I think Philly wins the series in 6. I just think, I know game 5 is going to be in Philly, but I still believe in Dwayne Wade, you know, and I think he can turn it on when he needs to. And I don't think he's going to let him go down without a fight. So, but I'm still picking the Sixers. I don't know. And I think that the Sixers beat the Bucks or the Celtics. I think that is a really interesting series. I had picked the Bucks just because, you know, they have Giannis, who is far and away the best player. But do you think the Celtics have the next 3 best players with Horford, Tatum, and Brown?
Yeah, it depends. Sorry, I was going to say it depends where you look at how Chris Middleton and Jabari Parker are playing. Because if they play like they did today, where Parker and Middleton had 27 points, I think Jabari Parker played extremely well, especially on defense. I think it's a competition, like, but if they were playing the first 2 games here and most of the regular season, I think Tatum, Brown, and Al Horford are going to be better than those guys. But if the rest of the series, Jabari Parker can play defense like he did and Middleton can drop 20-something and do it efficiently, then Milwaukee, I think, is going to be tough to beat for Boston.
Yeah, and I mean, I like Chris Middleton a lot. I just think, I don't know, that game that Boston played in Utah, I was very, very impressed with Jaylen Brown. I think Oladipo should win Most Improved Player, but I think Jaylen Brown definitely deserves some votes there. Jason Tatum is obviously really, really good player as well. So,
Yeah, I would say the exact same thing that if Victor Oladipo weren't having the year he's having, I think Jaylen Brown would be a lock for most improved player of the year.
yeah. Well, I don't know. I had picked the Bucks to win the series. I saw the two games in Boston, and they just didn't really look capable of doing it. To be fair, I didn't get to see the two games that were played in Milwaukee. But I guess I'm still probably going to stick with the Bucks. And with the away team, you usually say six, or not the away team, the team that doesn't have the home court advantage. But I also don't see them winning the next two games, so I'm going to say
That'd be,
Bucks in seven.
yeah, because that'd be four in a row for Milwaukee. See, I'm the opposite. I only caught a little bit of the first two in Boston, but I got to watch most of the two in Milwaukee, including all of today's game. And Milwaukee, they should, I don't think it should have been as close as it was. They were up by 20 at one point. They just had some lapses, and Brad Stevens is such a good coach that he coached them back into the game. But watching Boston play, even with Brown and Tatum and Horford, they're just not good. Like, I don't know anybody on their team. They're playing with, like, Aron Baynes is starting for them. They got, what's this guy's name? Samele Ojulwaji, the SMU kid who looks like a freight train but can't do anything on offense. Like, because Marcus Smart's hurt. We forget, like, not only Hayward and Kyrie Irving are hurt, but Marcus Smart is hurt, who was a huge defensive player for them and did a lot of their offense as well. So now Terry Rozier has such a bigger role than he should. Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are doing a good job, but they're still going up against Giannis. So I think Milwaukee's going to win that series, but it's clear that this is obvious. Brad Stevens is such a better coach than whoever's coaching for Milwaukee. I don't know why they fired Jason Kidd, because Milwaukee's doing the exact same stuff that they're doing. They didn't change anything. So if you're going to fire him, like, I get personality-wise, he might not be a great fit, but at least change some of the scheme stuff you're running.
Yeah, and that's kind of the problem with the interim coach is that, he does kind of want to prove that he deserves the job, but I just think that he knows that he's not going to get the job. So I mean, I'm sure he wants to do good, but obviously you're not going to be as motivated as somebody who, like, it's their team. So
Yeah, that's true.
that's a weird situation. So are we both saying in seven games for that series then?
I think so. And yeah, I think so. I got Milwaukee, Toronto, Philadelphia. You have Cleveland. You have Indiana. I have Cleveland. Is that right?
I feel so foolish betting against LeBron James, but that's what I'm gonna do.
And then in the West, Minnesota won last night to win game three. I think they can win game four, but I'm obviously Houston's going to win that series. Portland already got swept. How the heck did that happen? That was the last team I expected to get swept in the whole playoffs.
We just when was the last year that Jrue Holiday had a good year? Because we've seen him be good. I just think we forgot it because it's been so long. And then for whatever reason, just with the playoffs, he's reminded us that he's one of the best guards in the league, maybe one of the best two-way guards in the league. Rondo always does better in the playoffs. And then I feel like when we talk about the best, like, top five players in the NBA, we always go LeBron, KD, Kawhi, Giannis, and then we'll go to like Russ and James Harden stuff. And I feel we usually like, and people will be like, oh yeah, Anthony Davis is also one of the best players in the NBA. But then like we watch us like, whoa.
Yeah, he's incredible. I think New Orleans was one of those teams that I hated watching, especially after Cousins got hurt, just because it was Anthony Davis and a bunch of dudes. But watching the Portland series, Jrue Holiday is big. Like, he's so much bigger than McCollum and Lillard were. Like, Lillard played so bad when he was being guarded by Holiday. And Lillard, again, I think should maybe MVP this year. I think he's an all-NBA player. One of my actual personal favorite players, but he just could not do anything against Jrue Holiday. And it was so impressive to me how big Drew and physical Jrue Holiday is. Plus, he excelled on offense for New Orleans as well. So I don't think they're getting past Golden State, but kudos to New Orleans on taking care of that series, I guess, is what I have to say.
Yeah, good for them. Just Nurkic, just isn't gonna be able to match up with Anthony Davis. I mean, nobody can really match up with Anthony Davis, but in particular him.
In the offseason to see, because Portland, they need to do something different. I think if Nurkic is their third best player, they can do well, but their fourth and fifth best players need to be really close to that, and right now they're not. So let's see if they move Nurkic or do something. But after Lillard and McCollum, and to an extent Nurkic, Portland doesn't have anything. So they need to pick it up, I think. So I'll be interesting to see what they do in the offseason. And then earlier, about an hour ago, Golden State lost to San Antonio, so Golden State's winning 3-1 in that series. I think Golden State wraps it up at 5, and I think they beat New Orleans, and then beat Houston and go to the finals. Especially in the first round, Matt, I don't see San Antonio challenging them, do you?
I don't. Did Greg Popovich coach this game?
No, it was the Matori guy. It's Essena Matori, who's a head coaching candidate for a couple teams. He was the head coach.
That was interesting. It'll be interesting to see if he comes back this year. But yeah, I think you're right. Just playing in Oracle, I think they win in game 5. And then I don't know, man. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what Anthony Davis can do against Draymond Green, and then also what Drew Holiday can do defensively against an injured Steph Curry. I think that series can be more interesting than people think.
Yeah, and that's assuming Curry comes back. He, from what Kerr said a little bit ago, he said he's not even close to playing. So even when he does come back, he probably won't be 100%. So I think they were cheering for a long series between New Orleans and Portland, and that clearly didn't happen. So
yeah, so that was a really – that might be the key to the series, but – so basically, like, if Steph Curry doesn't come back, then you're going to have Drew Holiday guarding Klay Thompson. And that is something that I think New Orleans really likes, to not have Steph Curry running around. And then it becomes, how much can Golden State slow down Anthony Davis, and how much weight can Kevin Durant carry? Because I think this is, if Steph Curry doesn't come back, then Kevin Durant is really going to have to carry the weight of the team. And, you know, he's Kevin Durant, so he definitely can do that. So it's going to be interesting to just watch Davis and Kevin Durant go back and forth. I think that's going to be a really fun series to watch.
All right, guys, thanks so much for listening. So that's going to be a wrap for this episode. Again, follow us on Instagram and Twitter, MJ Doubletake. My personal handle for those is JacobCowden28, and Matt's on Twitter is MattCowden24. Also, feel free to email the show at mjdoubletake@gmail.com. Let us know what you think. Also, Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, AudioBoom. That's how you can check the show out. Give it a 5-star review, subscribe, leave a rating. We love all the feedback. So thank you so much. Thanks also for everybody who's reached out and said they've enjoyed listening to the show. We'll talk to y'all next week.